Straight Up with No Chaser. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Always love when we get the chance to catch up with the pride of Victor. Victor High School Hall of Famer, former NFLer, morning host at our Odyssey Sports sister station, Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Seth Payne stepping back into the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. And Seth is somebody who played in the NFL, played for multiple teams in the NFL. Is the revenge game a real thing, or is that just something we in the media like to make up because of the narrative?
Oh, that's a really good question, because it's one of those things that I think as a player, as a coach, you deny it, and but it's 100% real. And D'Amico Ryan talked about it this week, because you know he was in that same position as a player. He went to when he went off to Philadelphia, he came back and played here against Houston. So he's got very intimate knowledge of that. Now you know D'Amico never had any kind of what shall we say, interpersonal issues the way Stephon Diggs has had, perhaps. But D'Amico talked about how it always means something when you go and play against a team that either let you go or traded you. And, you know, whether the drama was real or not, you build it up in your own mind that you want to show them that, you know, that they made a mistake. So it's a matter of finding the balance and not going outside of what your responsibilities are or your role is in the offense or the defense. And, you know, so far, I don't think it's going to be a surprise to any Bills fans that Stephon Diggs has been awesome so far. Yep. In the locker room. You know, his relationship with the quarterback, it's exactly all the same stuff that Stephon Diggs was with Josh Allen the first couple of years there. And now that his contract's just a one-year contract, I'd be really surprised if it's something that boils over. I think he and Josh Allen have both been super careful in the last week or so not to say anything that could be fairly interpreted as bulletin board material. But yes, to give a short answer to your question, yeah, it's real. It's real.
Yeah, for you personally, Seth, just your history, you were in that spot, right? Like, you ended up in Houston only because Jacksonville didn't protect you, and then you're in the same division. What was that like for you the first time you were going up against a former team?
Well, that, you know, thank you. You know what? Thank you for reminding me of this. I forget some things. I'm glad a lot of my life is on public record because I forget these things. and I'm not being sarcastic. That's 100% true. When both Gary Walker and I were both defensive linemen that went in the expansion draft to Houston, the first time we played Jacksonville, we really took it to them. And one of the reasons was not just that Gary and I were really motivated, but the Jaguars offense didn't change their line calls. And, you know, we'd practiced against that offense for years and those players, and Gary and I were calling out plays beforehand. So it really steamrolled them to a degree, because yeah, they had a couple guys on the defense that were super motivated because we had played there. And then we also, you know, we did have knowledge of their offense that paid off. I don't think that happens as often anymore because everybody's hyper-vigilant about the calls getting picked up on TV and everything. But that's the other part of it. You know, Stephon Diggs, and not to limit it to just Stephon, but in this instance, Stephon Diggs has played against these defensive backs, and you can make an argument that these defensive backs, you know, understand Stephon Diggs as well. And that whole cat-and-mouse part of it is it's sometimes a big deal.
How have the Texans played here through 4 weeks? I mean, they're 3-1, obviously. Their record speaks for themselves. But I think when you watch the games, if you're a Texans fan, I imagine that you're not really comfortable in any of these games. Are you, Seth?
No. It's been way more harrowing than it should be. And you look at the Bills. Okay, the Bills go up against a couple of subpar teams and destroyed them. You know, and then they have a letdown versus the Ravens last week. It happens. But the Texans haven't had a game yet where it's felt like they're firing on all cylinders. And they, you know, even against the Bears, they really took it to Caleb Williams and made him look like a rookie, but the offense wasn't really operating all that well. They had a debacle there in Minnesota. So there hasn't been a game this year, even after a victory, where the players, the fans, or the coaches all felt like, okay, yeah, this is who we are. And they're making some progress in some regards, but two of the biggest things are they have not been able to run the ball against defenses that are playing a boatload of cover two and just doing everything they can to take away the deep threat of Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell, the three top receivers. So that should be easy opportunities for the run, but they really haven't been able to run the ball. And then the really frustrating thing here has been they've got so many self-inflicted wounds from penalties, and it's not just normal penalties. It's false starts. It's illegal formations. It's procedural stuff. It's all this stuff that just kills a drive. You know, in one series versus the Vikings, they had three straight drives in the first half after they'd already built a deficit where the offensive line single-handedly either took a big play off the board with an offensive line penalty or pushed them out of field goal range. They had four consecutive offensive line penalties in that game. And you can't beat good teams that way. And they know it, but it's three straight weeks of 11 plus penalties in a game.
Ooh, that's brutal. Seth Payne, 610 Sports, in Houston, Sports Radio 610, our guest here in the sports bar. Seth, as far as who's carrying the rock this week, how big a concern is that? Is it end up going to be Cam Akers here?
Yeah, that's a big deal. Because, look, Joe Mixon in the first game ran for 159 yards. It was versus the Colts, who apparently can't stop the run for anybody. But Mixon looked really good. Mixon looked like this change of scheme where, you know, Cincinnati had gone to being in shotgun almost all the time. And Mixon tends to be a better back when they can line up with a QB under center with Mixon 7 yards deep and just hit it hard. And that's what it looked like in the first game. He rolled his ankle early in the second game, and we haven't seen him since. So he's a guy that covers up a lot of errors and issues on the offensive line. Cam Akers is been doing way better than anybody should have expected from a guy who's coming off his second Achilles tendon tear. But they could really use Joe Mixon, especially versus the Bills. That, you know, the Bills, like, obviously they're a little bit, they're not as good versus the run as they are versus the pass. The Bills play a boatload of cover two naturally. So they naturally do what all these other teams have kind of been tweaking their scheme to do. But Joe Mixon was not practiced either Wednesday or Thursday this week. The ankle sprain seems to have been a pretty tough one. And the old rules were if you didn't practice at all, you weren't going to play. Those days are long gone. But so far, I'm not overly optimistic that Joe Mixon's going to play in this game.
Seth, can we talk about the defense a little bit? Because I feel like you have teeth on all three levels here, and it starts with that pass rush off the edges with Hunter and with Will Anderson Jr. How have they performed through 4 weeks?
They've done well. It's not as menacing a pass rush as I think we would have hoped. And those guys are getting chipped a lot. And they're getting, you know, guys are sliding their protection to them. The interior defensive line is a weakness both in the run and the pass. And it's been a mixed bag. I mean, they've had some good pass rushes at times. The defensive tackles have actually gotten, you know, including Tim Settle had two a couple in a game.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is they're kind of the beneficiary of the defensive ends collapsing the pocket or flushing the quarterback. So that's still a work in progress. It's like a lot of things on this team right now, it hasn't been as good as it looks on paper.
Tell us your thoughts here on what you're seeing out of Buffalo, because it is a Bills offense, and we kind of got a sneak preview at the end of last year what this would look like without Stephon Diggs when they changed coordinators. And through three games, Seth, fantastic, and then all of a sudden you face the buzzsaw in Baltimore. What are you seeing on film here from Buffalo?
Well, it's, you know, Josh obviously is doing all the things that everybody has noticed about Josh Allen this year. That's why I think he's currently the MVP favorite, right? I think distributing the ball the way he is and getting everybody involved and just, especially in those first three games, that's been impressive. It's looked like a new and improved version of Josh Allen. But then, unfortunately, you look and you see, like, oh, unfortunately, if you're facing the Bills, you look and you see, oh, yeah, and he still runs it, but it looks like he's taking fewer hits than he used to. So that part's a little bit discouraging. I think that right now where it matches up versus the Texans and where it'll be interesting is if if the Bills haven't been able to hit the deep shots and threaten deep the way that you'd like them to, they're facing a team in the Texans that has given teams opportunities either through coverage errors, mental errors, at times the safeties. You know, Jimmy Ward specifically looks like he's just getting up there in years and he can't run as fast as he used to. They've had multiple times where in the Indianapolis game, they allowed 5 plays of 30-plus yards. I want to say it was actually more than 30-plus yards, but some huge, huge deep shots downfield. But then the one area also is Kamari Lassiter, the rookie cornerback. He's played really, really well, but he's also had some glitches. And last week versus the Jaguars, I think pretty much everybody else in the stadium had this thought. After Kamari Lassiter let guys get behind him a couple times and were wide open, if Josh Allen were the quarterback instead of Trevor Lawrence, there's no way the Texans would have won that game. You know, Trevor Lawrence airmailed a couple of easy touchdowns. That first game, Anthony Richardson airmailed an easy touchdown. And, you know, we know that Josh Allen's not that guy. That's where the feeling in Houston very much is, all right, these guys have not shown that they could beat a genuinely good quarterback yet. And whatever Sam Darnold is this year, they couldn't beat Sam Darnold. And this is the first real guy, you know, the Vikings are a good team, I think, but the Bills were a known good team headed into the season. Josh Allen is a known quantity and is genuinely playing at an MVP level. I thought they were doing great, you know, until they botched the fake play there and trying to come back from that deficit against the Ravens. So this feels very much like a primetime game. Like this feels, even though it's at noon central, it has all the feelings of you're headed into a big time primetime game.
So it's interesting, Seth. I'm curious, I don't know how much of the Bills you've been able to see on their offense so far this year, but it feels to me like they're offense starts in the horizontal passing game, but you're saying that there's opportunity for the Bills if they wanted to stretch the field in the vertical passing game against this defense.
I think it's one of those things where if they can scheme it up and if they can design some things that a young cornerback might bite on, or if they can get some guys deep down, you know, and get the safeties isolated on routes, man-to-man downfield, then yeah, there's some opportunities there. It's gotten better since the first week, but there's still been they've gotten lucky a few times. So they have given up some opportunities. And D'Amico has not, you know, last year and when he was in San Francisco, he didn't blitz a whole bunch. He's shown more willingness to blitz and play aggressively when he feels he needs to. And I think that's where the opportunities come in.
Seth Payne, our guest, as we're talking about the Bills and Texans here in Western New York, there's kind of a feeling of, all right, that wasn't great by any stretch, that loss to Baltimore, but we take a look around the division. Okay, New England, we knew they were in a rebuild. Unfortunate to see what's happened down in Miami, and the Jets appear to be having some dysfunction. To a certain degree, is that the same thing in the Texans division right now? Because you're looking at a Titans team that you don't know who's going to be the quarterback right now. Indianapolis, they're certainly building. And then Jacksonville, who expected them to be 0-4. Are Texans fans feeling comfortable where they are in the division right now?
I think that there's a certain comfort level in that. But we're also a city that just watched the Astros go to the playoffs because the AL West was so atrocious. And then they lost. They got swept in a 3-card series in the playoffs. So there's no part. We're not in the mood for weak divisions right now. But we understand there's a larger picture. And I think honestly, overall, you know, we were going over this, kind of doing we're calling it the quarter poll of the season, even though it's not that way anymore with the 17 game season. But after the first quarter of the season, I'm kind of pessimistic about the offense right now, but then I'm looking over the rankings and the Texans are the 8th scoring offense. And because scoring is so far down, I think a lot of teams right now really feel like, man, they're not offenses just aren't what they used to be, at least so far early in this season.
Seth Payne joining us. Expand on the Houston, on the Astros a little bit, Seth, while we have you. I mean, it's still fresh in our minds, and I think a lot of people were worried about that team going into the postseason, knowing that they kind of rebounded from a real slow start.
Yeah, okay. So I don't want to make any excuses, because honestly, the Tigers are an interesting team, because you look at their offense, and you're like, okay, they don't have any hitters here. But A.J. Hinch A.J. Hinch in the first game came out and had a great strategy versus Framber Valdez and ends up tagging him for three runs in one inning by just having everybody hit opposite. And, you know, you can look at OPSs and batting averages and whatever else you want to look at. Like, it was a really good strategy that day. And then the biggest part of me, if I'm going to be a sore loser, I hate this three-game series because, you know, the Astros have better pitching depth. In a 5 or 7 game series, that tends to take over time. And you just you have one bad game, and if the bats go dry, then you're out. But I don't want to take anything away from the Tigers. They're scary right now. I mean, they've been the hottest team in baseball since July 1st, and they've got something brewing there that extends above and beyond the box scores.
How do Houston sports fans view A.J. Hinch? You know, as the guy, hey, he brought you place, but then how do you view that era of Astros baseball?
I think that it's complicated. It's really complicated because, you know, Hinch, when you go back to the – around here I call it the being better than everybody else scandal, but if you want to call it the cheating scandal, then that's fine. You know, it was at a time on the team where the veterans, Carlos Beltran and those guys – were kind of at the forefront of a lot of that stuff. And A.J. Hinch did not like it. You know, there were various times during the season where he broke a monitor because he was pissed about it. But the managers in baseball don't necessarily always have as much power as the veteran players on the team. And I think as a city, it felt like A.J. Hinch kind of got caught up in the wash of a really ugly situation. And yeah, certainly various people should have stopped it and this, that, the other thing. But yeah, I think people have a lot of affection for A.J. Hinch. I mean, the Astros were just beleaguered and atrocious and awful for a long, it felt like decades, but obviously it was a short period of time. So yeah, people have good positive feelings about A.J. Hinch. I'm happy for him that he's kind of had a little bit of a retribution story here.
Seth, love having you on. Great to have you on in your hometown, and continued success at Sports Radio 610. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week, bud, and thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Looking forward to this week. It's going to be hopefully a good game. If it's not a good game, I think it's because the Texans don't get the better end of it. So I'm hoping it's a good game.
Thanks, Seth. Let's do this again. Appreciate you.
All right, my pleasure.
You got it. Seth Payne, Pride of Victor, New York. That's... host on Sports Radio 610, our Odyssey Sports sister station in Houston.
All right, Bills fans, how do you feel? Like, if the Bills had a receiving core that you felt, and look, Shakir right now, you're hoping he'll make himself ready, but certainly sounds like there's some opportunity to move the ball downfield against this Texans defense, Mike Danger.
Yeah, I also found it very interesting that the revenge game is a real thing. That it's not anything that they talk about or they want to talk about in the media, but they have that inside of them. They're all competitors, and they all want to stick it to their former team.
Well, look at it this way. Like, you have to be up for every single game. You're going to get up more for one game? Well, then bring yourself up more for every other game. So that's why you get coaches downplaying it. You get players downplaying it.
Yeah.
And
it'll mean a little bit more if Houston beats the Bills. It'll mean a little bit more to Steph Diggs, and it'll mean to everybody else.
What about in reverse, though? Does this mean more to McDermott? Does it mean more to Allen?
That's interesting. I imagine it would mean something to McDermott, but I also put McDermott in an upper echelon. Like, this is beneath him. Like, this kind of petty, you know, this feels petty and beneath what he's about. And I think I kind of view Allen the same way. Like, yeah, when Allen says, yeah, I got a lot of respect and love for Stephon Diggs, I actually believe him, even though when they were teammates, Stephon Diggs was probably in his ear about a lot of stuff that Allen disagreed with or Allen didn't want to go along with. Because, I'll say this, it might upset Bills fans, the two of them made each other great. They made each other great. You can have any ill feeling you want towards Stephon Diggs. But without that guy, Josh Allen isn't Josh Allen that we know today. He's just not. They made each other. And Diggs, you know, also benefited from having Josh Allen targeting him as much as he did. So,
well, Danger, to your point, and this is coincidental, before Diggs showed up on the scene, what was the last game Josh Allen played? It was the playoff loss in Houston.
That's right.
And if you go back and watch that game, okay, John Brown.
Duke Williams.
Like, yeah, you had Cole Beasley, but he was playing on one leg at the end of that season. You realize, wait a second, you need something better here. And Houston, at that point, they still had Hopkins.
Yeah.
That's how this league changes so quickly. And, yeah, did Steph Diggs help make Josh Allen? You better believe he did, but then... Josh Allen, can he make the next wide receiver?
Josh Allen yesterday on Stephon Diggs.
Hopefully, yeah. I'll say what's up, and hopefully it's the favors return. I'm sure it will be, so we'll see.
A lot of questions, right? It's been going on for, what, 6 months, forever. But you kind of get why this is a big deal around the league for people, two high-profile players, and now he's on another team, right, in that sense?
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm sitting here. It's like it's not the most unusual thing. I think this thing happens from time to time, and, you know, I got a lot of love for him. I still do. The things that he did for me and my career and the things that he did in the Buffalo Bill uniform won't be forgotten anytime soon, especially from me. So that's how I look at it. At the same time, you know, going into year 7, I understand the business and the aspect of what this league is. And again, I'm just trying to focus on what we got going in this building.
Last week, you addressed the fact that celebrating the mentality on offense here is not a shot at Stephon Diggs. Why did you feel compelled to bring that up last week?
Well, I think people were making a bigger deal out of it than it was. And again, I'm a loving guy. I'm a loving teammate. I like to love on my guys and prop them up however I can. And I'm not doing that at the detriment of somebody else, whether that's him or anybody else that's put on a Bills uniform or anybody that's coached in our coaching booth. So I'm just trying to, again, be the leader that I am and be as authentic as myself to me as I can be and just lead these guys that are in this locker room.
Saying the right stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as how are you going to defend Stephon Diggs, we're going to get Terrell Bernard back. He has some thoughts.
You know, he was a great player. He is a great player now for us, or he was for us. And, you know, his explosiveness, you know, the things that he does, the energy he brings to the game, you can feel it on the tape. So it'll be fun. I'm sure a lot of us say what's up to him. So it'll be a good challenge for us.
How would you describe what it was like to have him in the locker room?
He was cool, man. He was a really good vet. You know, he never held back, you know, information or, you know, things that he saw or how he saw the game, how he approached the game. So it was cool to be able to, you know, just learn from him and be in the same locker room with him for a couple of years. So like I said, you know, we're excited to see him.
It does got to drive him nuts because you're wired to only think about what's ahead of you, and you keep getting this story that's behind you brought up over and over and over again, and it's salacious and it's dramatic and we love it and we eat it up. But these guys just want to get to Sunday, man. They just want to get to Sunday and play the game and not have to worry about who he was when he was here, and rather think about what can we do to stop him now that he's there. Really appreciate Seth Payne stopping by and sharing some insight on this year's Houston Texans squad.
If before we get to break, and we'll have time for your calls in happy hour at 866-4FAN, let me pass along this note from the NFL today. 60 former players have advanced in the voting process for the seniors category at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. These are players that are not no longer eligible in the modern era. So the seniors committee can vote in a few of these guys. There's one guy that's on the list, falls under the category of special teams from Buffalo, Steve
Tasker. Guy, come on now.
So here's what would be my advice to everybody. And we love, and they're not on tomorrow, by the way, because of the Sabres. But when they're back on Monday, resist the urge to congratulate Steve Tasker on being a finalist.
Yeah, no.
Because trust me, he doesn't want to hear it.
That's right.
When he makes it in someday, then we will have a big old party. All right? But the stress and everything else, I think it's a real thing when these guys are asked constantly. You know, it's kind of like the final act. And it always amazes me, Danger, that you have football, strong men, testosterone, everything, and hey, you made the Hall of Fame, Bill Cowher. Tears. Mm-hmm. Hey, you made the Hall of Fame, Jimmy Johnson. Blubbering. Like, what this means to these men to have their careers, their lives validated. And I don't think Steve Tasker's any different.
I think it means more to some than it does to others. I think you're right. I think for Tasker, it does mean something because it is upsetting to continue to be a finalist, but to not get the official nod and to hear it year in and year out. But then there are other players that I think they'll go through the dog and pony show, but it really they don't view it as the honor that it should be viewed as. I just think of, you know, a handful of players like...
Well, T.O. didn't even show up.
Right, exactly.
Didn't even, oh, I wasn't on the first ballot. I'm not going.
Right. Yeah, there's, I think there's a handful of players that are that way. We get a lot of time between now and April, but at some point, the is Eli a Hall of Famer debate will have to rear its ugly head because he's eligible, right?
Oh, no, not April. Like that Super Bowl week they announced.
Yeah, that. And yeah. It's...
And he is. He won 2 Super Bowls. He was the quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, on that alone, you could say, oh, yeah, he's got to be a Hall of Famer. But for some reason, everybody wants to look at Eli Manning and be like, Eli Manning, why not? Is Neil Lomax going into the Hall of Fame next?
Yeah.
Who's going in if we're looking at Eli's stats? Good stuff. All right. So we'll get to happy hour next. We'll give you what we heard from today's practice at One Bills Drive. Got some injury updates as well. Get you set up for action tomorrow. NHL season gets underway tomorrow. The Sabres season gets underway tomorrow. Yeah. We got a round of shots and your calls. You mentioned it, Gino. 866-4FAN if you want to join us. 585-866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.